OWS fam. Turn up the volume on this. I gotta kind of whisper. If you missed it, laryngitis. I'm supposed to not be talking, so I'll kind of whisper my way through this. I was going to. So this is my Bink Machine update / Sunday morning update to the player grid. I was going to put some rules into the Bink Machine. The more I think about it, the more I think I don't want to throw anyone off. As you guys know, I'm not playing this week. Don't want to throw anyone off with rules that might not be fully thought through. But I have a sort of weird quirk of mine, obviously, but I have continued to follow my normal process throughout this week in terms of practice builds, all the late week podcasts I listen to, press conferences I listen to. So I just wanted to go through basically my final thoughts on the week and update you on anything that I'm seeing differently from where I was at on the player grid. So on the player grid, I was kind of at this point of like potentially as much as 70% Justin Fields. I think it's going to be more like, again, I'm not playing, but this is just, I think through how I'm building, right? As if I am playing. I think it's more like 50% on my end is how I would put it into the Bink Machine if I were running these, if I were playing MME, if I were playing, you know, 11 to 13 single entry, smaller field rosters, it would be more like 40% or half of those with Justin Fields. As I've talked about, he is the play on this slate that the field should be chasing. And because everybody's still going to look for the other ways that they can play things, he's not going to be owned at the rate that he really should be. The full stack of Fields plus DJ Moore plus Trey McBride won't be owned at the rate that it should be, but that full stack will still be pretty popular. Obviously, Justin Fields will still be pretty popular. One of the things I mentioned in the player grid is throwing Cole Kmet into that stack is a really nice way to set that stack apart from the field. Some other things I was thinking about this morning, I was listening to the Searching for Ceiling podcast with Lord Reeves and Hilo. By the way, if you don't listen to that, in my opinion, it's by far the best podcast in DFS. So I was listening to that this morning, kind of coming up with some final thoughts, and started thinking, you know, they're both really high on this Browns offense against the Texans. And one of the things that Hilo pointed out was that, I think it was that Amari and David Njoku cost 11.7K combined. And the two games that they were healthy throughout with Joe Flacco, they combined for 22 targets. So he painted the question that I often paint in these situations where you just have a lot of targets going to two players or a lot of touches going to two players, a lot of projectable volume going to two players. And he said, if you could pay 11.7K for a wide receiver and you knew that they had a good shot at 22 targets, would you pay that, right? Where it's really just 2K more than what we've seen on the Tyreek Hills and Justin Jeffersons and in the past Cooper Kupp. Would you pay 2K more for about 22 targets, right? So that's a very interesting question. And then you recognize that if those two are hitting, because it's such a concentrated offense and because Flacco is so cheap, he's probably hitting as well. So one of the things I talked about this week is that it's very viable for no quarterback on this slate to top 25 DraftKings points. We kind of looked at the fact that Justin Fields has really only done it four times in his career, and he's the only quarterback on this slate with a really clear pathway to doing it. So if he doesn't, then it could be a week where nobody does. So Flacco becomes very interesting in the context of what if Fields doesn't go for 25 plus, or I should say, what if he doesn't top 25? What if he finishes in that 22 to 25 point range and you can get Flacco for significantly less and he puts up that same type of score? So basically bump down Fields a little bit, bump up Flacco a little bit. And the concept is instead of setting apart my DJ Moore, again, DJ Moore and Trey McBride, again, I'm not playing. I would realistically think that I would have 80% of each guy this week, which if you're confused on why I'm not playing, if I could enter DraftKings lineups from Oregon, I would be playing this week, but travel the week before Christmas is just a lot. And then, you know, that's that, right? So I'm not going to play on FanDuel with lower volume and pricing that I'm not used to and all that, and then be tired all day on Christmas Eve just to play on FanDuel. So taking the week off. But again, thinking through everything, because that's just how my brain works, is I want to keep my process in place. Realistically, like, I would lean 80% DJ Moore and Trey McBride, maybe more like 60%, but somewhere in that 60 to 80% range. Again, those are my only blue chip and light blue chip plays on the slate on paper, and they correlate well together. So that elevates the power of them. Again, both guys will be popular. They'll be played together a lot, but not as much as they should be, as in compared to the raw ownership each guy will grab. They won't be played together as much as they should be, and they work really well together. So the concept would be to then set my DJ Moore, Trey McBride rosters apart, some of them apart, by instead of going Fields, who a lot of people will have when you have those two players, instead of going Fields plus Cole Kmet to set it apart, go Flacco, David Njoku in that flex spot, and Amari Cooper to set it apart. And it just becomes like a really high floor, high ceiling type of setup and a really unique type of setup. So again, in my player grid, four quarterbacks on my list. That's really like the core quarterbacks. If I were playing 150 rosters, I'd probably add 2 to 3% of Kyler Murray opposite Justin Fields, because I think that's an interesting bet. Probably add a little bit of Jared Goff. Lord Reeves made a good point on that Searching for Ceiling podcast that, yes, Goff is not likely to hit, but his ceiling compared to the ceiling of other quarterbacks on this slate is going overlooked. Like, there is a pathway to him hitting, kind of laid out in my DFS interpretations for that game, how and why that Lions offense is so interesting in this spot. So probably have a little bit of Goff, and that's still probably the extent. I would be underweight the field on Nick Mullins because there's too much confidence being expressed in him, but he would still be one of those kind of core four quarterbacks I'd be going after. And it would probably be like 40 to 50% Justin Fields. And then of the other 50 to 60%, Flacco at the top, Trevor Lawrence a little bit behind him. We have gotten news that he's cleared to play. And again, I don't think that the field will react heavily enough to that news. And then Mullins behind that. And then sort of that like little bit of MME scatter of, you know, potentially some Jared Goff, some Kyler Murray. Interesting to note that the Falcons were surprisingly 1-point favorites over the Colts. The Colts are 8-6. Falcons are 6-8. Falcons have had this tendency to blow games. Arthur Smith is on the hot seat. Shane Steichen is trending toward potential coach of the year. That was a one, so kind of a surprising 1-point favorite. Obviously, the game in Atlanta. They're now 2.5-point favorites. So just something interesting there. And you know, we've talked about this throughout the season, but the Falcons are, if you take away quarterback play, and obviously some of the strange things that Arthur Smith does where he uses his elite talent to distract the defense and give the ball to somebody else. But if you, generally speaking, just take away quarterback play, this is genuinely a top 10 team. And that's why their record at 6-8 is kind of surprising to a lot of people in the know. And they've had a lot of close losses, a lot of games that they, you know, late game blunders from their quarterbacks have given away their games. So it is a better team than the Colts, but with the quarterback issue that they have. So just an interesting spot that they are favored by 2.5. Still like the Colts in this spot as a, you know, kind of talked about this offense that can hit for a big game. But the Falcons are interesting. And as I kind of highlighted in the player grid, Bijan Robinson, Breece Hall, two very interesting plays. A guy who I wasn't on until listening to Hilo and Reeves, but is also very interesting, is Devin Singletary. Again, we know that the workload has been there, what is it, 3 of the last 4 weeks with Damian Pierce on the field. The 1 week when it wasn't there was the 1 week when I was heavy on Devin Singletary and being like, hey, you guys, he's the lead back now and nobody's on him. And then Damian Pierce ended up being the lead back that game. The one game before that, the two games after that, Singletary has functioned as the lead back, getting, you know, what, last week, I think Damian Pierce had one touch. So Devin Singletary, when you're talking about, it's easy to say, oh, well, it's a bad matchup against the Browns. And yet everyone is on Ty Chandler, you know, with an implied team total of only 3.5 more points than what the Texans have, in an equally bad matchup against the Lions' run defense, and Ty Chandler likely to be less involved in the pass game than Devin Singletary is for the Texans. So I think Devin Singletary is an interesting large field way to go. Small field tighter builds, Breece Hall and Bijan Robinson are, again, the two backs who stand out the most to me. Chuba Hubbard is a step behind them, but I'm not going to go out of my way to argue against the Chuba Hubbard love that's out there either. So if you prefer Hubbard over those guys, take that swing there. And then, you know, I talked this week about how we have an edge on smaller slates because it's easier for us to find the true best plays on the slate and kind of avoid the fragile chalk. And we have an edge on smaller slates because it's easier to be confident in what the field is doing and to use that information to think about the strategies that could lead to a first place finish. So on this particular week, it becomes even more valuable than normal. I feel like my voice is getting quieter, so I apologize. Turn up the volume if you need to. I feel like on this week, it becomes even easier than normal to find the places where you're not necessarily predicting what's going to happen in games, but you're identifying what can happen in games and can lead to first place finishes. So this is a week to break out of, again, we always try to break out of that rut of thinking that our edge is purely predicting what's going to happen. And we've seen it throughout the year that there have been a lot of weeks where we've had big weeks at OWS because we're just better than the field at predicting what's going to happen. And it's been like, oh, these are low-owned plays or lower-owned plays or plays that people don't have confidence in and they should. And we recognize that and we hammer those plays and then we're way ahead of the field when those plays hit. So that is part of things, but that's less a part of things on this particular week. And there are weeks and there's that general sense of like, we need to be willing to move out of that prediction mindset and into the mindset of saying, okay, the NFL is unpredictable. And on weeks where predictions are a little more fragile or where everything's bunched up a little bit more and it's a small slate and the field is congregating on these spots, what are the spots that could move us way around this big clumped up range of ownership and shoot us to the top of the tournament field? So some thoughts along those lines. Mentioned this in the player grid, but it's easy to be sharp. I mean, it is sharp to look at this Cowboys-Dolphins game and say, okay, like it could very easily not turn into a shootout. And if it doesn't turn into a shootout, if it even just hits its total or goes a little bit over its total, these players are probably way too expensive for the production you're going to get. And that is what's likeliest to happen. But as I mentioned in the player grid, as I mentioned in DFS interpretations, there are angles here to say, what if this game shoots out? What if it's close? What if it's a back and forth game? And what if it shoots out? And I don't think that we will see enough ownership on that scenario. The quarterback's coming in with low projected ownership. Jalen Waddle coming in with low projected ownership. Tyreek Hill coming in with moderate projected ownership. Again, he has said that he can't cut. Is that true? Who knows? Maybe he comes out and has a monster game. Maybe he comes out and he's a decoy. That willingness to burn some rosters, that willingness to burn some rosters and say, look, if this doesn't play out this way, that's okay, because things can play out this way, and if it does, then I'm way ahead of the field. I don't know if that made sense the way that I phrased that. Also made me think about Josh Morano. You guys have heard me talk about Josh in the past. Josh, excellent season-long player, has been working for years on how he can translate that to DFS. Josh Morano, one of the guys who reads the NFL Edge audio, a guy I know from an old season-long league 12 years ago that I was in with him. Super sharp guy. And he, you know, one of the things he's always tried to break out of, and I've talked about him on Winner Circle and even on some Angles podcasts, some of our conversations, what he's always trying to break out of is moving outside of just, so he's good at season long because he's able to predict what's going to happen over the course of a season, right? Which players are undervalued over the course of a season. But then it's harder to break out of that mindset in a DFS weekend where you need to be willing to embrace some of the plays that maybe don't look good on paper. So he sent me this best ball roster of his that what was this? This was last week, so I haven't followed up with him to see how it's doing. But this best ball roster of his, that in the first round of the best ball playoffs, it got 27 points from Ty Chandler. It got 17 points from Zamir White. 22 points from T. Higgins. It also had Jameson Williams on the roster. It also had Raheem Mostert on the roster. Devin Singletary on the roster. What was really impressive to me about this roster that he sent to me was, this is a guy who is working for, has been working for years to break out of that mindset of predicting what's going to happen, right? Well, it's easy in best ball to use those late round picks to say, and you know, there are like the Puka Nacuas in the late rounds or the Tank Dells that we can look and be like, hey, these guys are going to have much bigger roles than people are going to expect, right? I was hammering, I didn't even play best ball this year, and I was hammering that in August, like draft Tank Dell, draft Puka Nacua. So yes, there's those guys, but generally speaking, the guys you're taking the late rounds are really just guys that you feel more comfortable with because they have confident roles, and yet they're not actually going to win you a tournament. And so that willingness that Josh had to take a Zamir White, where you're really just saying, man, hopefully Josh Jacobs gets hurt or something happens there with his holdout, right? You're taking Zamir White. Same thing with Ty Chandler, where he's the clear backup, but you're just hoping like, hey, he has shown in preseason that he's more talented than the other guys they have. And maybe he eventually gets this role, right? And so that type of mindset where you're saying, hey, this roster could actually be totally burned because I'm taking with these 15th, 16th, 17th round picks, running backs who are actually backups, running backs who might never get me any points. And yet there is a chance that in week 16, week 17, week 15, whatever, that these guys actually end up being really valuable and being the reason I move on to the next round. So that same type of mindset here of like, okay, I don't actually think that Tua doubles is going to be the way to go this week. But if Tua's on 1% of rosters, then that means Tua doubles are on even less than 1% of rosters. So if you put that on 3%, 4% of rosters, and that ends up being this week where this game shoots out, and it's this legendary 38 to 35 shootout between two high-powered offenses, then you are so far ahead of the field, right? So that's one of those spots I mentioned that I could see Bears and Cardinals actually being a shootout with these two running quarterbacks. Is that what's likely to happen? No. Could it happen? Yes. So that's another one of those spots where I would want to be thinking about that. Lions and Vikings, you know, all this interest in Nick Mullins. Well, put the whole bet together, right? Don't just play Nick Mullins at high ownership. Play Nick Mullins double stacks and bring it back with Amon-Ra St. Brown and Jameson Williams, right? Do something like that where you say, yeah, if Nick Mullins scores 20 points, fine. He scores 20 points at high ownership. You can chase a different quarterback who might be able to outscore him, and that's valuable, right? The reason to play Nick Mullins would be he puts up 27, he puts up 30, he puts up a big game, and then it becomes these double stacks that are actually the way to go, and the bringbacks that are actually the way to go, because it's a comprehensive game environment that's paying off. Or you say, if everybody's betting on Nick Mullins, maybe a Nick Mullins and Ty Chandler, maybe that means that Jared Goff has a big game, right? So kind of look for ways to leverage, either overbet that spot or avoid that spot, recognizing you need the whole game environment to go off. Hilo and Reeves had some really interesting notes on Browns Texans. I'm not totally coming around on that myself, but I certainly see what they're talking about there, and that's one of those that also could be a surprising shootout. We've seen a lot of these Browns games on the road. I think Hilo brought up they've given up like 30 points per game on the road, which is just nuts. Now, a lot of that's fluky and some random stuff, but still, that stat still exists. So that's one of those games that you could see being surprising. And then Colts and Falcons, again, we talked about that. Not one that I'm really on, but I could see that one shooting out. I could see building around that game. So think about that in some spots this week of what are the spots that you could say, I'm willing to, and look, even if you're like, you know what, on 60, 70% of my rosters, I'm going to be more conservative and more prediction-minded in the way I'm building and really just build something high confidence, because a lot of times it is what wins tournaments. Keegan and I talked about that on the DFS Lab this week, like when we built Justin Fields, Cole Kmet, Trey McBride, DJ Moore roster, and then like filled it out with Justin Jefferson and what was it? It was Justin Jefferson, Chuba Hubbard, and Breece Hall, and Jamal Agnew to make the salary all work, right? Like, and we looked at it, we were like, we talked about how having Cole Kmet as part of that stack, like the combinatorial ownership of that four player stack was going to be low, and like we had all these high owned players, so cumulative ownership was going to be high, but it was nevertheless a unique roster construction. And we were talking at the end of building that roster about how a lot of times you look at tournament winning rosters and they look a lot like that, where you're like, dude, all of these are like obvious plays. How did I not think of this roster? So you can build your 60, 70% of rosters that are like that. Even if you're building, you know, eight rosters, you can build your 60 to 70% rosters that are like that, where it's just like, you know what? High confidence plays across the board, but just put together in a unique manner where you have low combinatorial ownership on like some stack or even just like on the salary allocation. You can do that with 60, 70% of your rosters this week to kind of feel comfortable with that, because that typically is the best way to win tournaments, is like all good plays and just put together in a more unique way than people are seeing to put it together. What Keegan said after we built that roster and we were talking about a lot of times the rosters you see at the tops of tournaments kind of do look like that, was Keegan was saying that like he's always surprised that those aren't duplicated, right? Because it's like a roster that just looks so obvious. And I was like, man, how is this not duplicated? How did I not build this? How did other people not build this? So that's a roster like that, right? The Fields, DJ Moore, Trey McBride, Cole Kmet. You've got the salary for Justin Jefferson. You put in two of these running backs in Chuba Hubbard and Breece Hall. You save the salary with Jamal Agnew. You put in the Buccaneers defense to make it all work. That's what that roster was. Looks obvious, and it's like, man, you know, and then you can play around with that, right? You can move up to Parker Washington, move from Justin Jefferson down to Mike Evans. You can move off the Bucs defense, obviously, move over to the Titans or move up in salary. Like, there's a lot of different ways to take that roster construction and mess around with it in different ways. And then, you know, move off of Justin Fields and over to Flacco, who's still pretty high confidence, and go Flacco, Amari, Njoku, and kind of mess around with what that looks like. And just play these really high confidence plays. And maybe you have like an eighth piece on there. Or I always say eighth piece because I don't consider the defense, but what I'm saying this week in write-ups is eighth or ninth piece. So in other words, those final pieces on the roster where you're like, and here's my home run swing. Oh, actually, side note on that. I do think that Calvin Ridley is really interesting this week. Zay Jones, I didn't write him up. I wrote up Jags wide receivers, but Zay Jones out. And obviously Christian Kirk out. And the targets are there for Calvin Ridley. So we've seen these weeks, and playing the Bucs, we've seen these weeks where he just absolutely smashes. I don't think people will really be on him. And then obviously with heavy blitz rates of the Bucs, you know, I was saying fringe interest on Evan Engram, but probably a little bit more heavy interest than just fringe interest. I think he actually is a really sharp play this week. So he's in that bucket for me, along with Njoku. Trey McBride is kind of head and shoulders above them. And then it's like Njoku and Evan Engram are kind of the next tier. And then below that would be Kmet, Laporta, Hockenson, kind of all in the same tier. But Kmet becomes more interesting to me than the other two because of the way he fits into that Fields stack. And that's really the only place I think where I would be playing Kmet is in that comprehensive Fields stack. But yeah, that's sort of my tight end tier. So I moved Evan Engram up in my thinking in my tight end tiers. Definitely moved Calvin Ridley up. But yeah, you can kind of add that eighth or ninth piece. It's like a Calvin Ridley, right? Where it's a kind of low floor, but high ceiling home run swing. And then the rest of the pieces are just like really obvious high floor, high ceiling pieces. You can do that with 60 to 70% of your rosters, but also save a chunk of your rosters this week. Maybe it's not 30 or 40%, but even if it's like 15%, 20%, to be like, you know what? I'm going to overstack Lions and Vikings. I'm going to play Kyler Murray and build around a story of this Cardinals-Bears game being a shootout. I'm going to play two of doubles and build around a story of Dolphins and Cowboys being a shootout. Like, I think there are some opportunities this week for one game, because it's likely that none of these games take off in a way that justifies the salaries on the players, right? And then you're just kind of trying to hit the one-off pieces. So if that happens to eight of these games and only one game takes off, you're so far ahead of the field if it's one of these games that nobody's really building around. Or even Lions-Vikings, people aren't comprehensively building around it in like toward a shootout. So think about that, because if that happens this week, you have an opportunity, right? We had the week last year, week two, was it last year, when Dolphins and Ravens was a shootout and had a middling total, I think like 44 points and no ownership. And it was like, what was the score? Like 42 to 38 or something crazy like that. Like, and we had OWS, like, we weren't heavy on that game as a community because nobody was on that game. But there were enough people in the community who were like, man, there are explosive pieces in this game. and nobody's on it. That OWS like won almost every tournament that week just from the small percentage of our users who were like, hey, I've learned enough about DFS to know that a low-owned game with explosive pieces, let's stack it up and see what happens, right? So this is the type of week where if there is one game like that, you will be so far ahead of the field that you won't even be competing with anybody. And so really want to encourage you to think about that on this particular week. That wraps up my thoughts. I wanted to hit on those game environments. I wanted to hit on that kind of like slight scale. Again, nothing changes in the way I'm seeing fields, but just in like what I think is the most plus EV way to try to win this week. I'll scale down my fields a little bit, scale up my Flacco and Trevor Lawrence a little bit. Nick Mullins' exposure doesn't really change. Probably be in like the 6 to 10% range on Nick Mullins. And then kind of add in a little bit of Jared Goff, Kyler Murray in large field play, Tua in large field play. I wanted to hit on the value of those game stacks that people just won't be on. Even in spots where people are on some plays, but those full-on game stacks people just won't be on. I wanted to touch on that Falcons component. I wanted to hit on Devin Singletary. Wanted to hit on Amari Cooper and David Njoku pairing, and obviously makes the most sense throwing Flacco onto that, but you could play them without Flacco as well. Wanted to hit on Calvin Ridley and Evan Ingram and kind of my developing thoughts there. I guess last thing, want to hit on Garrett Wilson. You know, again, so easy to be like, dude, the quarterback situation is awful, but he's going to see so many targets that he is like, he's popular. He's more popular than he should be with such a bad quarterback, but he's still nevertheless a sharp play. So want to highlight that once again, that like, I don't like the play, but you know what? It still makes sense to have it on 15 to 20% of rosters, maybe slightly underweight the field or even with the field. You might even have the confidence to go overweight the field, right? Because he's the kind of guy who on talent alone can put up 30 points given the target volume he's likely to see against this Washington defense. So with that, but basically the Garrett Wilson thing is just to say, like, don't overthink it. Don't just be like, yeah, it's a bad quarterback situation. I'm going to fade this guy, right? Like, it's like Drake London a few weeks ago, where you can come up with all the reasons why it's a bad play, why the field is overconfident in it. All of those things are true. And yet he can still put up that 30-point score that like the field is wrong for getting it. And yet it's there, right? The score is there. That's within Garrett Wilson's range of outcomes. There aren't a lot of players on the slate with that within their range of outcomes. So, I would say like, make sure you get some exposure there and don't expose yourself to an opportunity to just get totally buried because he puts up 30 points that you felt like the field was wrong for chasing. And so you just completely faded it. Learn from your mistakes, or better yet, learn from my mistakes. That's everything on my end. Weird week with no podcasts, but, I bought me a lot of extra time on Friday for working on the player grid. So in the content channel on Discord, when I posted that the player grid was live, I posted that I really liked this week's player grid. Again, just gave me a chance to kind of dive into more nuance on things. And this voice note, kind of same thing, piggyback off that. And hopefully you guys feel really prepared for this week. Like I said earlier this week, if it's a week where you just don't have the time, don't have the confidence, don't have the mental or emotional energy, take the week off. Do this thing where you have prepared for the whole week and then you're like, you know what? I'm not going to play. Hands off. And then once you make that decision, you're going to feel really relieved. You're going to feel a lot of confidence in the week and you're going to feel compelled to play. You're going to be like, oh, you know what? Actually, I am going to play. The best thing to do is to not. The best thing to do is say, you know what? No, I said, I'm not going to play. And then you'll see like most of the things that you expected to happen will play out. Doesn't mean that you would have gotten them all onto a roster together, but it will give you that boost of confidence for the last 2 weeks of the season. I'm like, man, you know what? I really am on top of things. So that's one way to play this week. Another way to play this week is to be like, dude, people have this time crunch. A lot of people aren't going to be at their best this week. I feel like I'm still at my best. So I'm going to play a little bit more volume than normal, or at least I'm going to play my normal volume and really maximize the edge, because there is a big edge available this week if you feel like you are capable of taking advantage of that edge. If you feel like you have a sharp feel for the slate, if you feel like you have a handle on things, if you feel like your emotional and mental focus and energy are there, there definitely is edge on this slate. If I could play, even though with Christmas Eve on a Sunday, I would prefer to not be you know, my process has me up to like 4 a.m. I wouldn't want to be tired all day on Christmas Eve, you know, with a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old, like their memories, not to be that I'm, that their dad is tired all day or having to take a nap because he was building DFS rosters. Even with that, like, if I could still enter DraftKings rosters from Oregon, I would be playing this week because I do think there's like a really nice edge on this slate. And then I would just drink a lot of coffee on Christmas Eve and like make it all work. Because I do think it's a really, really nice slate this week. So, yeah, that's everything on my end. I will see you next week. I will have a voice. I will be able to do my podcast and have a normal week. So I will see you next week. And I will be keeping an eye on the leaderboards and see many of you at the top of the leaderboards on Sunday. Merry Christmas. Thanks as always for hanging out. Really, really grateful and appreciative of all of you, this community. Love it. Yeah, I'm out. Talk soon.